Welcome to today's edition of the Clay Travis and Buck Sexton Show podcast.
Welcome back in, Clay Travis, Buck Sexton Show. Appreciate all of you. By the way, we want to say we're waiting, awaiting Ted Cruz here. We should have him shortly. But want to say thanks to all of you out there. November new record for podcast downloads for the Clay and Buck Show. We're one of the most downloaded, I think second or third highest downloads for all of iHeart for a radio show, which is a credit to you guys being able to find the show wherever you want to go. You can search out my name, Clay Travis. You can search out Buck Sexton. And I actually jumped in. A lot of people are giving us five-star reviews, Buck, and I was going to hit you with this one because I thought it was pretty fantastic. And by the way, if I happen to see a funny one, this is what happened, Dub flags a funny one for me. We got a five-star review, but the response here, Buck, I think you're going to love it. As we scroll through, the subject is rolls. It says five stars, R-O-L-S, rolls. Buck, I love you, but shut your mouth about dinner rolls. Your particular affliction has left you ill-equipped to appreciate your own bias towards the seminal foodstuff of humanity, bread. And then I didn't know you could do this. He somehow put a bread loaf in his review on iTunes. So
he is not incorrect. I mean, when you have celiac disease, all of a sudden bread becomes the enemy. So my hatred of rolls, there's deeper levels here.
So if you make Dub laugh, then there's probably a good chance that that is going to be flagged and we can hit this for you. Buck, we talked about this a little bit yesterday as we were running through Jen Psaki answering questions. Peter Ducey was kind of putting Jen Psaki on the hot seat. He's doing a fabulous job, by the way. And then also Dr. Fauci came in. And we talked about, and we'll ask Ted Cruz about this whenever we're able to get him, but when Fauci immediately responded to criticisms by addressing January 6th, it was a hyper-partisan response. It's the kind of pivot that you would expect to see
from an MSNBC host. Let's be honest. You expect an MSNBC host to drop January 6th in there for no reason.
But what I think is really blowing things up, and again, the latest variant, the Omicron, it's located in New York. That's where somebody got it. It's in Minnesota. It's in California. Look, Clay, it's going to be everywhere.
It's basically everywhere. Right? I mean, it's all over the place, generally speaking. It's already in dozens of countries. People kept saying, oh, it's in South Africa. We do need to establish South Africa identified it.
That's right.
That does not in any way mean that it comes from South Africa. But anyway.
So when his response was, yes, everybody who's coming into the country, by the way, there are all sorts of new COVID regulations that were put in place and announced this morning. I'm sure many of you woke up to seeing that, including that the mask mandate, which was set to expire in mid-January on airplanes and plane and bus travel and trains and everything else, has been extended. But when Fauci was caught trying, and I'll bring in Ted Cruz, I want to get his response to this. Senator Cruz, thanks for joining us. Did you see Dr. Fauci say that everybody coming into the country has to be tested except for all the tens of thousands of people every day pouring across our southern border? And if so, what was your reaction to Lord Fauci there saying that we could test everybody coming in legally, but everybody coming in illegally was untestable?
I think we have Senator Cruz. Senator Cruz, you're there.
Did you hear my question, Senator?
Good to be with you guys. I heard part of the question, but not all of it.
Well, basically, Fauci said illegals, different set of rules for them when it comes to COVID restrictions. What the heck's going on there, Senator?
Well, I did like your reference to Lord Fauci. I think it ought to be Little Lord Fauci, Roy. look, his answer demonstrated the absolute hypocrisy and the partisanship that you have seen from Fauci and from the bureaucrats in the Biden administration from day one. And the obvious answer, is it a problem from a perspective of COVID, from a perspective of a pandemic, is it a problem to have 2 million people come here illegally, not to test them for COVID, for the Biden administration to release them when they have COVID? Of course it's a problem. Any kindergartner wearing a play school stethoscope knows that it's a problem to release 2 million people without testing them, many of whom have COVID. Fauci doesn't want to say that because it's politically inconvenient, but he's more than happy to embrace the partisan talking points of the Biden White House And I think Fauci is the single most dangerous bureaucrat in the history of America. And I think he has done more to undermine the credibility of scientists and our health officials than anyone in the history of the country. And I think it's profoundly dangerous.
We're speaking to Senator Ted Cruz of Texas. Senator Cruz, a bunch of courts have already weighed in. I believe a panel of three judges in the Fifth Circuit striking down the OSHA Biden mandate. You understand how this stuff plays out both at the legislative and legal level at the highest level. Where does this go from here?
Well, these mandates are illegal, they're unconstitutional, and they're an abuse of power. The Biden White House has issued four different vaccine mandates. One is directed at active duty military, soldiers and sailors and airmen and Marines. One is directed at federal civilian employees. One is directed at federal contractors, anyone that does business with the federal government. And then finally, one is directed at private employers that have 100 or more employees. That's the one that is done through OSHA. All of them are illegal, and they have the order I laid them out is in descending order of the legal basis for those orders. So the most obviously lawless of the four is the OSHA order for private employers. The Biden administration has faced lawsuits all over the country challenging those mandates. And as you noted, federal court after federal court has enjoined the mandates, has said these are contrary to law. Now, it's in the early stages of litigation, so there will be the injunctions were issued because the courts determined that there was a likelihood of success on the merits by the plaintiffs. Now, that doesn't mean they've won. It means they've made an early determination that they've made a serious showing of a violation of law. What is amazing is number one, I believe Joe Biden and the Biden White House knew full well these orders were illegal when they issued them. I think that the White House lawyers and the Department of Justice lawyers told them these are illegal. And I think they cynically issued them anyway because they assumed that a great many people would obey them and it would take time for the courts to strike them down. But number two, we don't have to speculate about that because when the Federal Court of Appeals for the Fifth Circuit enjoined the order to the vaccine mandate for private employers, the next day the White House press office stood up at the podium and told people you should obey the order anyway, even though the federal courts have enjoined it, have shut it down, you should obey it anyway, and that is utterly lawless. And this crisis has revealed petty authoritarians who are willing to trample on your individual freedom. When it comes to vaccines, I support vaccines. I've been vaccinated. My family's been vaccinated. But I also believe in individual choice and autonomy and freedom. And these Democrats who want to order you to get a health care procedure against your wishes, it is an absolute abuse of power.
Let's come back here with Senator Ted Cruz of Texas in just a few minutes. Stay around with us, folks. Welcome back to the Clay Travis and Buck Sexton Show. We're talking to Senator Ted Cruz of Texas. Senator Cruz, I have to ask you, when, you know, you saw, I'm sure, over the weekend, Fauci sitting down with Margaret Brennan of CBS, and for no apparent reason, he to swat down criticism of his decision making, which, of course, he's a bureaucrat. He shouldn't be making decisions for the whole country, but he is. He threw in January 6th. What? I mean, I've been saying he's obviously a partisan hack for about 18 months now. But what does that say to you?
Exactly what you said, that he's a partisan hack. But it's worse than that. He has been drinking his own Kool-Aid. He is the arrogance of Dr. Fauci has now it almost became a self-parody. A little bit later in that interview, he said, "I represent science. I am science." It's bizarre. And he said, "You can't criticize me because to criticize me is to criticize science." What utter and complete garbage! And let's be clear, by the way. Fauci has managed to be wrong on COVID repeatedly throughout this crisis. At the beginning, he said COVID's not serious. It's not a threat to American health. He was wrong on that. At the beginning, he said, don't wear masks. Masks don't do anything to prevent the spread of COVID. Now, apparently, he thinks he was wrong on that. At the beginning, he said, there's no evidence this came from the Wuhan virus, the Wuhan Institute of Virology. That was a lie at the time. He knew it was a lie at the time. He was in email communication with Mark Zuckerberg, urging Facebook to silence anyone from pointing out the overwhelming evidence that this escaped from a Chinese government lab. And most strikingly, so the question that Margaret Brennan asked him is she said, well, Ted Cruz has called for you to be prosecuted. And he came back with, what about January 6th? I mean, it was like Beavis and Butthead. He just screamed, liar, liar, liar. Well, when it comes to being prosecuted, that's actually a legal question. And I didn't just randomly call for someone to be prosecuted because I don't like them. You prosecute someone when they have committed a crime, when they have committed a felony. And specifically, Fauci came before Congress and he testified that the NIH has not and never has funded gain-of-function research at the Wuhan Institute of Virology. It was categorical. It was an absolute statement. Subsequently, the NIH, in writing, has refuted that statement and said, well, actually, they did fund research that by all appearances, was gain-of-function research. Gain-of-function research is when scientists take a virus and they make it more dangerous. They make it more contagious. They make it a greater threat to human health and safety. And what appears to be the case is that it was Dr. Fauci and the American government that was helping fund what may well be the experiments that developed COVID-19. We need to know the answer to that. We don't have enough information to know that conclusively. But what we do know is that on the face of it, what Fauci told Congress and what the NIH has said in writing are directly contradictory. And it is a felony under 18 U.S.C. Section 1001. It is a felony punishable by up to 5 years in prison to lie to Congress. And that, on the face of it, is what Fauci appears to have done. His response, he didn't say a word of it to Margaret Brennan. And I will say it was unfortunate. Look, I think Margaret is a talented journalist. It is a shame she didn't actually follow up and say, well, here was the specific, here's what you said, here's what the NIH said, aren't these contradictory, and why shouldn't you be prosecuted for lying for Congress? Instead, she allowed him to get by with just a partisan insult, and it says something about his arrogance that he believes all he needs to do is virtue signal the leftists, hey, I'm a leftist too, and he doesn't actually have to follow the law or tell the truth, and he can remain dishonest with the American people. I think that's really unfortunate.
Senator Cruz, we know you have a meeting. Last question for you, and you can be quick on this. We appreciate you making the time. Enes Kanter has changed his last name to Freedom. He's become a citizen of the United States. He is attacking China aggressively. The WTA has also announced that they are pulling their events out of China over Ping Shui, a basically disappearing women's tennis player. Are you encouraged by suddenly seeing American athletes and organizations standing up to communist China?
Very much so. Peng Shui has demonstrated enormous courage. She publicly accused a senior Chinese communist official of sexually assaulting her. Within about 30 minutes, they took down that post and they essentially disappeared her. She was the number one ranked women's doubles player in the world, the only Chinese national to be ranked number one in the world. And they've just disappeared her. The Women's Tennis Association has shown extraordinary courage calling out the Chinese Communist government, demanding that Peng Shui be released and that she be free. And they put their money where their mouth is. This week, the Women's Tennis Association canceled their events in China, giving up millions or even hundreds of millions of dollars by doing so. And I got to say, it is a stark contrast to the NBA. You and I are both diehard hoops fans, and the contrast with the NBA, when Daryl Morey sent an innocuous tweet about Hong Kong, stand for Hong Kong, stand for democracy, the Chinese Communist government freaked out, and the NBA groveled on their knees before the communist dictators. You had people like LeBron James defending the communist dictators who engage in murder and torture and run concentration camps. And I got to say, Enes Kanter calling out LeBron James, I thought his shoes were hysterical with LeBron bowing before the Chinese communist overlords. And I'm grateful that Cantor is showing courage and the Women's Tennis Association is showing courage. And I'll tell you something. Right now, the Women's Tennis Association has bigger balls than the NBA. And I'd like to see courage be contagious and more people stand up.
Senator Ted Cruz of Texas,
well
sir,
said.
Always appreciate you being with us. Thanks for making the time. We know you got a vote to tend to. We appreciate it.
Thank you, guys. Take care.
That's Senator Ted Cruz. We want to let you know, that was a lot of fun, by the way, this holiday season, how about saving some money? You can get a new iPhone 12 for just $479 from our friends at Pure Talk Cellular. Through the end of the year, that is an incredible offer. You can switch to Pure Talk away from AT&T, Verizon, or T-Mobile. You'll get nationwide 5G coverage, the same coverage as the big guys, but for substantially less money each month, like $50 less or more. My own son is using a Pure Talk phone. He loves it. Eighth grade, always got extracurricular activities, helps us stay on the ball when it comes to picking him up and making sure that he makes all his events. Thanks to Pure Talk's 30-day risk-free guarantee, nothing to lose. And right now, you get unlimited talk, text, 6 gigs of data for just $30 a month. iPhone 12, also, like we said, just $479. How do you get signed up? Get your cell phones in your hand right now. Dial #250 and say Pure Talk. You'll get an additional 50% off your first month, plus save on a new phone. That's #250. Say Pure Talk. Some restrictions apply. Call for details.
Welcome in, everybody, to Hour 3 of the Clay Travis and Buck Sexton Show. We have with us Governor Tate Reeves of Mississippi. Governor Reeves, thanks for being with us.
Hello, how are y'all doing today?
We're good, sir, we're good. Tell us, first off, because obviously the whole country was hearing about, many watching or listening live, I should say, to the oral arguments that occurred earlier this week in the Supreme Court about a Mississippi law meant to protect unborn babies. Can you just tell us the specifics about what is this law accomplishing, and why do you believe that it will be upheld?
Well, the law that passed the Mississippi legislature, and I have a little bit of a unique perspective here, because while I get the opportunity to serve as governor while we're arguing this case before the United States Supreme Court, I was actually the president of the state Senate that helped usher this bill to its passage. So it's particularly important to me, would not allow for any abortions in the state of Mississippi beyond 15 weeks of gestation. We believe that this is a reasonable limit, and if you look at the two rulings that currently set abortion laws in Mississippi and therefore in the United States as well, it's basically the two cases, Roe versus Wade, which was decided in 1973, as well as Planned Parenthood versus Casey, which was decided in 1992. And we believe that the United States Supreme Court got both of those cases wrong. And we think this is an ideal opportunity for the court to recognize that and to really right a wrong decision.
Governor, appreciate you coming on with us. This is Clay. When you watched the discussion, And look, any lawyer out there can tell you that trying to analyze the questions of any judge is sometimes a fool's errand. But it seemed quite clear, even I'm looking at that front page of the New York Times, they said, hey, this questioning went really well for the state of Mississippi. I feel like that they are going to uphold your law, maybe also overturn Roe v. Wade and Planned Parenthood versus Casey. But let's assume for the first part that your law is going to be upheld. Would you anticipate that almost immediately the Mississippi law becomes a model for many other states across the country? And if the law is upheld at 15 weeks, would Mississippi go back and say, hey, let's see whether 10 weeks or 12 weeks or 8 weeks, like what number doesn't that just encourage, if they say 15 is okay, the next question is, well, what number is not okay? How much more can we restrict? Isn't that the natural evolution here?
Well, Clay, let me be clear. I believe that life begins at conception, and anything we can do to reduce the number of unborn children that are aborted is a major victory. And so so we're going to continue to try to protect every single unborn child. You know, There has been 62 million unborn children in America since Roe was decided that have been aborted. 62 million in America since some 49 years ago. And so it is, there's no doubt that, regardless of how the court rules, the words that they write on the page in their opinion is going to be exceptionally important as to what our next step is. I certainly believe that if the court upholds our law, and I believe it should be noted, because I don't know that everyone really understands this. The other side in this debate, the abortion on demand crowd, they really do want Americans to believe that this story would be that this law would be outside the mainstream of abortion laws in the world. Nothing could be further from the truth. If you look at states like California and New York in the U.S. right now, their abortion laws are much more alike China and North Korea than they are like other countries around the world. In fact, if this 15-week ban is upheld, there are 42 countries in Europe, Clay, that allow elective abortions. If our law is upheld at 15 weeks, there will still be 39 countries in Europe that have more restrictive abortion laws than Mississippi. And I believe Mississippi is one of the most conservative states in all of the United States, and yet still 39 countries in Europe would allow more restrictive laws. This is a piece of legislation that's really in the mainstream of what's going on in the rest of the world. And I'm hopeful that the nine justices recognize that.
We're speaking to Governor Tate Reeves of Mississippi. And Governor, Clay and I are trying to get a sense. We don't know, obviously, what the Supreme Court's ruling will be. Nobody does until it comes out in June of 2022. But we will be in a midterm election year. I know that you're focused in on the state of Mississippi and what's happening, you know, in the state for which you are the governor. But if you were to take a look at the national political contest that'll be underway next year, how do you see Roe and the Supreme Court looking, you know, Roe v. Wade, the Supreme Court looking at the Mississippi law playing into that? And what do you think the effects will be?
Well, you know, that's a great question. And it's one that I know many of my friends in the political realm are very interested in that question. What I would submit to you is a couple of things. Number one, I believe that the people of America are with us on this issue. If you look at the latest Gallup poll, and let's be honest, and I think we can agree that Gallup is not exactly a right-wing polling organization, but if you look at the latest Gallup poll, there are only 18% of Democrats in America who believe abortion ought to be allowable in the third trimester. There are only 41% of Americans, according to Gallup, that believe that any abortion should be allowed after the first trimester. Because of that, I think this particular bill probably has the support of between 60 and 70% of Americans. And one of the reasons that I spent a great deal of time over the last week or so going on every outlet that I possibly could, including those that are exceptionally unfriendly to me, is because I believe the more we talk about the reasons we're standing up for unborn children, the more Americans we can convince to be on our side on this issue, because by and large, Americans are good people, and they want what's right. And so I believe this is an issue that we as Republicans can win on. I believe that it's certainly an issue in Mississippi that we can win on. But I also tell you, Clay and Buck, and this may not go over well with everyone. Sometimes I think we have too many politicians in America that are focused on the next election rather than being focused on doing what's right. And for me, this isn't a Republican, a Democrat, or an independent issue. This isn't a left and right issue. This is an issue on right and wrong. And if I were to lose my next election because I fought too hard for unborn children, you know what? That's something I can get up in the every morning after I lose that election and say, you know what? Look myself in the mirror and say, I did what I believe was right. Because people like me and others like me around the country have to stand up for the rights of the unborn, because they cannot stand up for themselves.
We're talking to Mississippi Governor Tate Reeves. Governor Reeves, I was just much less serious news here, but also positive stuff. I was just down in Oxford, Mississippi, one of the great jewels of college landscapes across the country. Lane Kiffin had a good year. I'm good buddies with Mike Leach, Mississippi State's coach. I'm sure you saw when Dr. Fauci came out and said, oh, when college football season starts, COVID is going to feast on all these red state crowds. I'm looking right now at the latest data. The five states with the lowest rate of COVID in America, according to the data I'm looking at right now in the New York Times, Mississippi, Georgia, Louisiana, Hawaii, Alabama, and Florida. I think that's six states. What are you seeing on the ground? Five of them are red state, southern states there. What are you seeing on the ground as it pertains to COVID in Mississippi? I know COVID can make fools of everybody when it comes to prognostication, but do you think you guys have gotten through the Delta variant, and what are you seeing in terms of the numbers on the ground on a day-to-day basis in your state?
Well, when the Delta variant initially surfaced here on American soil, it obviously started and hit those of us in the Sun Belt and in southeastern states very hard, very quickly, very early in the process. And what we saw is an uptick in cases, which led, of course, to an uptick in hospitalizations, primarily amongst the unvaccinated, but an uptick in hospitalizations, an uptick in the number of patients in ICU beds. But unfortunately, there's so many people around America that have tried to treat this virus and treat this disease with politics. And the reality is, what we've tried to do in our state is recognize that there's only, we can certainly do certain things that protect us at the margin, but we also have to realize that our job is to protect the integrity of the healthcare system to ensure that every single Mississippian who gets the virus that can get better with quality care receives that quality care. And so we've been focused on the integrity of our healthcare system. We have seen everything from cases to hospitalizations to patients in ICU bed to patients on ventilators down between 90 and 94% from our peak back in August. And obviously that's a good thing. I just happened to look at the data because I was having a conversation recently. Our total 7-day average, the most recent one that I've seen a day or so ago, was 237 cases. On the same day, the state of Michigan had approximately 10,000 cases on a 7-day average. And so what you were looking at that time was literally a state that had 3.5 times our population had 50 times our number of cases. Again, it doesn't matter if you have a Republican governor or a Democrat governor, and it really, the virus is going to virus at certain times, and we've just got to be prepared to deal with it.
Governor Tate Reeves of Mississippi. Sir, appreciate your time very much today. Thanks for being with us on the Clay and Buck Show.
Thank you so much, Clay and Buck. Appreciate it as always.
If you traveled over Thanksgiving, you saw how many people were online in airports and hotels using the free Wi-Fi that's offered. It's easy, free, convenient, right? But it's not safe. Cyber hackers love that environment to find unsuspecting online users. They can see you online because they're skilled at doing just that. You have no idea how easy it is for them to get your passwords and your personal data. That goes away the minute you start using ExpressVPN. This is an online virtual private network. It hides our online presence from the bad guys, and it shields your personal data and your searches too. Hackers can make up to $1,000 selling your personal info on the dark web. ExpressVPN creates a secure, encrypted tunnel between your device and the internet. You fire up the ExpressVPN app and click one button to get protected. It works on your phones, laptops, and tablets. Clay, how do you secure it? How do you get hooked up?
Today, all you got to do is visit expressvpn.com/clay. That's expressvpn.com/clay. You get an extra 3 months for free. expressvpn.com/clay.
And so when a huge group of criminals organizes themselves and they want to go loot a store, a CVS, a Nordstrom, a Home Depot, until the shelves are clean, you think that's because of the pandemic?
I think a root cause in a lot of communities is the pandemic, yes.
And and Buck show. There you had Saki Bomb dropping yet another one. And props to Steve Ducey. I mean, it's the best job in the West Wing is to be the one person who can and will ask real questions of the regime, right? I mean, most of the people that are there, there's no point. They're just there to take the press releases from the West Wing and tell everyone what a brilliant mind Saki, you know, has all the time. But Ducey of Fox News actually gets to push back, get information, get answers that they don't want to give. But I just want to,
killing it, by the way. Let me just, Peter Ducey, he's only 34 years old. And it feels like every day we've got at least one question from him, just actually holding their feet to the fire, right? I mean, he is doing the phenomenal job of speaking truth to power, which is what journalists are supposed to do and so few are willing to do.
Could you imagine if we even had half of people in the media that were at least willing to be somewhat oppositional to the regime or just hold them to account? I mean, just actually do the speak truth to power thing. Instead, we have 95% of them in the back pocket of the regime, and we see what the results are with what's going on here after now going on 2 years of Fauci-eyed madness. But anyway, on the crime issue, which is what I thought we should dive into for a second, notice that you're hearing her talk about root causes, which is a class. I mean, that's what it used to be back in the 70s, back in the 80s, when people were unwilling in major cities that were being destroyed by crime, because crime has such a corrosive effect top to bottom, right? When you have too much crime, and particularly in a city, concentration of people together, you're going to have businesses that move out. You're going to have real estate values collapse. You're going to have lesser goods and services. It filters all the way through, and it has such a deleterious effect on everybody who lives there. And then in the 70s and 80s, they had all this, it's root cause. Essentially, crime is a social problem, a societal problem. And what we learned is that, no, actually, there's a very small percentage of people that act as criminals in society, very small percent, even in high crime neighborhoods. It's a very small percent of people that are actually committing the crimes. And if you enforce the law, it's what we learned with Giuliani, among other places, broken windows, policing, etc. We all know about that miracle, right? Well, what's really causing the problem now? It's obviously not the pandemic, because the pandemic hasn't resulted in higher crime rates in other countries similar to us. It's actually lower crime rates, particularly lower violent crime rates. We've seen a huge spike in violent crime. A large part of it is what we could call the progressive prosecutors, and which is a project that is financed. This is not a conspiracy theory. It is financially backed by, in part. I mean, he's one of the backers of this effort. George Soros wants there to be people that are making the decisions about how we deal with criminals in the criminal justice system. People that are always taking the most left wing, let's be honest, view about it. Let them out as quickly as possible. Punish them as seldom as possible. Introduce social justice measurements into the whole process of whether or not someone should be held accountable for a crime. And the results of that are things that we see in San Francisco and New York, to be sure, Clay. But I was actually doing some research with my team on TV earlier in the week. And what's amazing is that a lot of people that are listening to this in much smaller cities that don't get a lot of attention in the national news media, Lansing, Wichita, you get on the list, they've also had major increases in crime. And they also have progressive prosecutors in these places.
It's a fundamental failure. And this all, to me, is directly tied back to the Black Lives Matter, George Floyd protests. Because what that did, they were so successful in branding any criticism of response to George Floyd as racism, or the next step, which is what everything is now, white supremacy, that if you were a white person, and certainly if you were a white person in a position of prominence, you were effectively held hostage by Black Lives Matter, and the argument to defund the police almost became an argument that any white person was afraid to argue against. And really, the unfortunate thing of lenient on crime policies is most of the cost is not borne by affluent people in rich neighborhoods, because the overall crime rate in those neighborhoods is still very low. They still have lots of police. They weren't the ones arguing in favor of defunding the police. The cost is borne by majority minorities in inner city neighborhoods. And so if you go through and look and we say, okay, well, the murder rate was up 30% in the United States, the murder rate among minority populations increased way higher than 30% because they were the overwhelming victims. The unfortunate reality is Black Lives Matter protests led to more black lives being lost than at any point percentage increase in decades in the United States of America. And that's such an uncomfortable truth, Buck, that you know how this works. A lot of uncomfortable truths are buried instead of discussed, because if you discuss it, the people who bring it up are afraid of what people are going to say about them. Facts are white supremacist evidence. Facts are racist. This is the problem with having a national debate when you have so many people afraid to say what they really feel.
It's absolutely true. And one of the big issues that we've seen with Black Lives Matter as a movement is that it actually goes in the exact opposite direction when they talk about police reform from what is often needed. And when you talk about the bail reform laws that are out there, okay, bail reform in general might sound like a good thing because you don't want people just because they don't, you know, I don't have $500, I'm in for a nonviolent crime, I have to sit in jail for a week. That's what we were led to believe bail reform is. But now it's turned into, well, basically, unless we think you're a threat to society, you're going to be in and out on the same day and you're not going to have to pay any money. And it feels like the whole process is meant to be just an easier process for the criminal. And when you add into this, by the way, Clay, the number of people who commit crimes who would have been pre-bail reform held in custody, but actually get arrested and then reoffend before they even see a judge, it's stunning. I mean, it's a number that should be zero, and it actually happens with frequency. People will get out. Oh, I just stole something. Well, I'm going to go steal something else. You know, what's the big deal? I'm in and out in the same day.
Waukesha is a direct result of this. Those six people in Waukesha, Wisconsin, are dead because of bail reform. That's the reality. There are probably thousands of people this year alone that are dead because of bail reform. And there is a difference between somebody who has a nonviolent offense and is being held behind bars and somebody who is in a position of committing a violent felony and they're let out, like we saw with Daryl Brooks in Waukesha, for $1,000 when they never should have been out at all. It's absolutely ridiculous. And by the way, we'll close out the show in the next segment. But first, born 20 years ago as a result of the human toll we all suffered on 9/11, the Tunnel to Towers Foundation has been honoring America's heroes ever since. To mark 20 years since 9/11, the foundation's chairman and CEO, Frank Siller, connected where America was attacked on foot. He literally walked from the Pentagon to Shanksville, Pennsylvania, to downtown Manhattan, where he retraced his brother's footsteps. His brother, Stephen, was one of the first responders we lost that day. Tunnel to Towers Foundation, bringing hope to heroes and their families, giving away at least a home a day from Thanksgiving to New Year's Eve. Right now, you can honor our vow to never forget. Donate $11 a month at T2T.org. That's T, the number 2, T.org. Welcome back in. Final segment, Thursday edition of the program. We appreciate all of you hanging out with us. Thanks for setting a new record for the podcast downloads in November. Christmas season, setting a new record in December may be tough because a lot of people are going to be on the road. Maybe not. Maybe a lot of people on the road downloading. Go sign up today. Buck Sexton, Clay Travis. You can search us out on iTunes, Stitcher, Spotify, Google Play, all those different places. And when you sign up, you can give us 5 stars. If Dub shares a funny review with me, I may read it. We read a funny review earlier today, making fun of Buck for being opposed to roles. As we get ready, Buck, by the way, hopefully going to be better with his voice tomorrow, but because he's getting closer to 40 years old, we don't want him to die before he turns 40.
Thanks.
We do have a birthday in studio today. Producer Mike, behind the scenes.
He's an engineer, my man. He keeps it all going.
Producer. Everybody's a producer in my mind. Mike, happy birthday, my man.
He has been with the EIB folks for about, what, 30, Mike? About 30 years. Mike's been with the EIB for about 30 years.
We get that question, and we probably don't say it enough. Rush had such a beloved crew that worked with him on the show. When Buck and I got the opportunity to take this show, everybody who had worked with Rush also got the opportunity to continue to fight the battles that Rush cared about so much and continue to work alongside of us. And virtually everyone stayed with the show, which is a tremendous testament of loyalty and how much of a good employer that Rush was to work with. But also, I think all the people who work behind the scenes that you don't necessarily hear from on a day-to-day basis, they are providing us so much support so that we can do the show at a high quality like we do. So happy birthday to Mike. Yeah. We got a lot of people behind the scenes that you guys don't necessarily know that make this show. They're the engine behind this this show on a day-to-day
basis. They're running up the artillery to the front lines. They're spotting the enemy. They're calling out the shots. That's the team here in NYC and out there in Nashville, Tennessee. EIB, man, we're all over the place these days. And, you know, turning 40, Clay, I got to tell you, it's quite a milestone that's coming up here. So
I was telling you during one of the commercial breaks, so I watched two shows that are airing right now. Yellowstone, which is just kind of like Dallas in Montana, wildly fun, but also kind of a crazy show. And then I watched Succession. Now, I also watch Ozark, and obviously I watch a lot of college football and NFL and sports related. But the most recent Succession episode, one of the characters turns 40 years old. And I was just asking you, Buck, during the commercial break, if you have watched it yet, because it's a fabulously well done episode, but it also is so incredibly dark. And I was like, with you about to turn 40, you're going to watch this thing and be like, oh my God. I mean, it's so well done, yeah. But man, it is a dark, dark episode.
You know what was the highlight of my Thanksgiving, other than the dinner, obviously, with the family, was watching with my sister and my brother-in-law and my little brother, because the sister and brother-in-law had never seen it. You know, Aliens, the James Cameron.
The original?
Aliens. No, so Ridley Weaver. Scott did Alien. And then there's Aliens,
yes.
Which, you know, I nerd out over these action movies. Although technically these are more sci-fi. People always say that. Aliens feels a bit more like an action movie. But that one really holds up, man. I got to say, that was fantastic. Sigourney Weaver, great in Aliens, great in Ghostbusters. I'm sorry she's a huge lib, folks, but she is a good actress.
She's the new Ghostbusters. I said this for those of you who might have missed it. I took my boys. Fabulous.
Is she well done?
I don't want to give anything away.
All right. No spoilers here on the Clay Travis and Buck Sexton
show. It's still relatively early in the amount of time that's been out.
Do you ever watch like the other? No, you're not. You know what? I can tell before even asking. You probably make fun of the Dungeons and Dragons kids in high school.
I did make fun of the Dungeons and Dragons kids.
You were stuffing them in lockers with your like puka shell necklace and your long hair playing soccer, Travis.
I did have all three of those things. Yes, all three of those things were
rocking out.
I was not a Dungeons and Dragons or what was that like mystery? Like what was the Magic the game or Magic cards?
But there was Magic. There were some kids in my high school played that. We always kind of kept a close eye on them. But then there's also they were kind of a weird bunch.
No, I mean that's the people you worried about were the people who were playing Dungeons and Dragons.
There's The Witcher was what I was going to ask you about. That's like way outside your wheelhouse.
No,
right?
I haven't seen that.
Netflix show. It's based on a video game, which I think is usually not a particularly good start, but sometimes that works out. Sometimes a video game made into a movie can be kind of okay. But I'm going to be looking, especially because this weekend I'm obviously going to be hunkering down and trying to find things to watch. You know, you try to find new shows that you can binge watch when you're sick and you got to keep people away from you. So I was just
speaking. I was going to say we're talking off air about this, too. Speaking of Hollywood libs, I don't understand what's going on with this Alec Baldwin interview. He's claiming that he didn't actually pull the trigger led to the shooting. Like, you're more of a firearms expert than I am. So he's claiming the gun discharged on its own. Like, what is this?
I don't even understand. We actually have him saying it, right, Mike? Do we have this? He says. He says it. Alec Baldwin, again, also like a huge lib and not a very nice person. A very good actor. I'm just kidding. I mean, look,
great actor.
I call it like it is, right? He's a good actor. He's a huge phenomenal lib.
On 30 Rock, which is was a hysterical television. Yeah,
great in The Hunt for Red October. I mean, anyway, he was a very talented actor. Actually, one of the better hosts for SNL back when SNL used to be funny. One of the, you know, he would do the guest hosting. I think he may have been among the most frequent guest hosts of it, too. He's got a lot of range. He's funny. He also was in this horrible incident. And here's what he says about the situation.
It wasn't in the script for the trigger to be pulled.
Well, the trigger wasn't pulled. I didn't pull the trigger.
So you never pulled the trigger?
No. I would never point a gun at anyone and pull a trigger at them. Never.
We're going to have to get a further explanation of this one because
it doesn't make any sense then. So the gun accidentally discharged while he was pointing it at somebody. Why didn't it discharge before then?
Yeah. Guns don't accidentally discharge. People accidentally discharge guns.
So that's what I'm saying for this scenario. And you would think, by the way, it's also on film, right? There would have to be, I would think that there's some sort of evidence of what exactly happened. So maybe he's trying to argue that somehow the trigger was like he was shaking. I don't even know what his defense is, but that is a super weird line to have. We'll see whether or not any charges are going to come out of this because obviously the prop person who had a loaded gun in the first place had to have failed in order for this situation to ever arise, but I didn't pull the trigger on a gun that happened to shoot someone while it was in my hand. Seems like a tough defense.
Let's on to something less depressing. Favorite Western movie, Travis. Now, by the way, some people are going to get very fired up at you with this audio. You better watch what you say on this one. Best
well,
Western
so
for you.
So favorite Western is... The question to me is, are you wanting, like, the best Western film?
Stop lawyering this. Yeah. Stop lawyering this. I want
my favorite to watch is Young Guns. When I was a kid, Young Guns 1 and 2, I was obsessed with. Now, I also love...
Can I offer up one? Since we're, I would say Tombstone, which I have a feeling
that's
might
what
be,
I was going to say. That's exactly
I had a
what
feeling you were
going
to go there, so I
was going to Tombstone, which is also fantastic. But that's a little bit more of a sometimes you watch, like, this is my example on Yellowstone. Yellowstone is not high end art.
Everyone in Yellowstone is such a bad person. That's why I couldn't get through the. They're all
bad Succession.
People.
There ain't a lot of good people in Succession.
Yeah, I
either.
Know, but you know, I don't know.
But in terms of just sheer popcorn movie, when I was a kid, I loved Young Guns 1 and Young Guns 2. Emilio Estevez, Charlie Sheen, Lou Diamond Phillips. That was a hell of a
I saw
group.
That movie 1,000 times. We could actually
Billy
see it. I could go through the whole script right now with you if you wanted to. Like, I remember most of the lines from it. It was a good Charlie Sheen performance. He doesn't last very long. Sorry about that spoiler. But he's pretty solid
alert.
In it. And Emilio Estevez was great. It is the best Lou Diamond Phillips performance of all time. Tombstone for me is for the modern Western, the most watchable, enjoyable. It's so good for what it is. If you're going old school, I'd never seen The Outlaw Josie Wales before. I watched it maybe a couple months ago. Holds up very well. The spaghetti Western, so-called spaghetti Westerns with Clint Eastwood, I think it's tough to beat The Good, the Bad, and the Ugly in some of those. I got to say, Hostiles and also the remake of True Grit are also really good Westerns.
I like True Grit, Dances with Wolves, old school Kevin Costner. And
you love Kevin Costner. We got to have a whole
Kevin
talk
Costner's
about this. What's with Clay and Kevin Costner?
He's a great talent. I watched until it got way too weird for me. Westworld was great. Like old school, kind of the way that they were melding past and present and all the craziness going on there was a really fun Western.
That's a Michael Crichton thing, by the way. He originally wrote
it. Spiraled out of control.
Yeah,
I couldn't keep up.
Tomorrow, folks, we're going to drill down into the biggest news stories, most important stuff across the country. Till then, rest up. We'll be back with you 24 hours.